We are doing the Parashat Devarim, and tonight's learning was sponsored in memory of Sarah Chaya Bat Dani HaKohen, and Neshama should have an Aliyah. As usual, we try to cover the Parsha quickly in the beginning, and then review it with more depth. Our Parsha is really the beginning of a new book, the Book of Devarim, the fifth book in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. The Book of Devarim is different than the first four books. This book was written during the last period of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. And in this book, Moshe Rabbeinu speaks in first person. All the other books, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't discuss himself. Everything is written in third person, as though someone else is writing the Torah about Moshe, about the Jewish people. In this book, suddenly Moshe Rabbeinu switches and we find Moshe Rabbeinu speaking about himself, you, me, us, we. This book is completely different. It has different halachic criterion. Even people who aren't Dorish HaHekesh elsewhere in the Torah, in the Book of Devarim, they say we do Darshan and HaHekesh. And there are other points, really. We could have a class solely on this concept and what is unique about the Book of Devarim. In the Book of Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu takes the Jewish people through a journey reviewing their past, reviewing the mistakes, what we should learn from the mistakes. And Moshe Rabbeinu, Yosef pointed out a minute ago, shows us things from his perspective, gives us more insight as to what happened. Part of the book is rebuke, the first few chapters. We have very few new mitzvot in the Book of Devarim. We have a review of the older mitzvot. The Book of Devarim is said to the generation that will enter the land of Israel. This is a new generation. This is a generation that many of them did not witness the great miracles of Mitzrayim or the splitting of the sea. And it is to this generation that Moshe Rabbeinu is talking from our Parsha throughout the Book of Devarim. Let's take a quick 2-3 minutes to review all of the Book of Devarim. In our Parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu reviews the sins of the Meraglim and our journeys till where we are today, till where the Jewish people are situated after conquering Sichon and Og and ready to enter the land of Israel. In Parshas Vayeschanan, Moshe Rabbeinu reviews how he begged Hashem to let him into the land of Israel, and Hashem refused. Hashem said, you take a look at the land of Israel, but you're not going in. And then Moshe says, now let's review the laws. And from Parshas Vayeschanan onward, Moshe starts reviewing the laws. And he begins with the importance of sticking to the tradition. Moshe Rabbeinu will warn the Jewish people numerous times throughout the Book of Devarim, do not stray after the girls of the land, do not stray after the pagan beliefs of the land of Israel. And Moshe Rabbeinu says it time and again. It didn't work. We see that the people did stray after the girls and after the pagan beliefs. But Moshe Rabbeinu knew that this was the danger, and so Moshe Rabbeinu repeats it time and again. You'll see it maybe 15-20 times throughout the Book of Devarim. Moshe reviews the Ten Commandments in Parshas Vayeschanan. In Parshas Vayeschanan, Moshe Rabbeinu tells us the Haftarah we will read on Tisha B'Av, Ki tolid banim uvnei banim v'noshantem ba'aretz. You should know as the generations evolve in the land of Israel, what I anticipate will happen, Moshe Rabbeinu says, is that you're going to be exiled ultimately. It's not going to work. You're going to go after the idols. And I warn you, when you do that, you'll be kicked out of the land of Israel. They haven't yet entered. And Moshe is already warning them that they will be exiled. And that's why we read it on Tisha B'Av. Moshe Rabbeinu says, but when that happens, remember, Hashem is waiting for you to return. It's not over. This is one of the strong answers to Christianity. Moshe forewarns us. You will be destroyed, you will be exiled, and God will be waiting for you to return. Moshe Rabbeinu tells us the Parsha of Shema in Parshas Vayeschanan. And in Parshas Vayeschanan, Moshe Rabbeinu gives us many of the proofs to Judaism. He says, has any other nation witnessed such a miraculous event, such as God appearing before 2 million people? There you have the Kuzri's claims in a nutshell. We then move on to Parshas Ekev. Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to the Jewish people and says, you keep the Torah, things will go well for you in the land of Israel. You'll have blessings, you will be prosperous. And if you ask yourself, how can I conquer these nations? So look at the previous miracles. Don't worry, God took care of you thus far. He'll take care of you and bring you into the land of Israel. This is where we have the description of Eretz Chitah U'Seorah. This is where we have the seven species. And this is where we have the commandment for Birkat HaMazon. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the people, the nations are more powerful than you, and you're not going to conquer them by virtue of your might, but rather God will conquer them for you. And don't think that you're so righteous, but rather God has decided that it's time for them to leave, and God promised you you would have it. It's not because you're such righteous people you're getting the land of Israel. For throughout your history you've been rebellious. You've not lived up to what God expects of you. Moshe reviews how he had to bash the Luchos. He says, 40 days and 40 nights I didn't eat and sleep. I was preparing to give you the tablets and you destroyed. I had to break the Luchos. From the day I know you, Moshe says, you've been rebellious. I had to pray to annul the decree that was pending for the Jewish people. And then Moshe reminds us how he prepared the second Luchos. He reminds us how Aaron passed away. And we start having the mitzvos. Moshe Rabbeinu begins in the end of Parsha Seker. He says, what does God want of you? At the end of the day, what's the big deal to keep this Torah? And Moshe starts reviewing the mitzvos. He begins, he tells us about how judges have to do justice, how we have to love the ger, we have to love Hashem. And then we have the Hoyon Shema Tishmu. If you keep the mitzvos, so then things will go well for you. That's at the end of Parsha Seker. That brings us to Parsha Re'eh. Parsha Re'eh has many mitzvot, including the three regalim, and the kosher animals and non-kosher animals, kosher birds, non-kosher birds, Parshas Shoftim, the laws of judges, Iran Nidachas, true prophet, false prophet, what happens with an Egla Arufa, what happens when we go out to war, how the Kohen has to speak to the people, the commandment not to fear during war, special commandment. And then we come to Parshas Kiseitze. Kiseitze is the Parsha that has the most mitzvahs in the whole Torah. Parshas Kiseitze is a review of many, many mitzvot, and many mitzvot that are not recorded earlier in the Torah. Earlier in the Torah, we do not have the concept of divorce. The whole concept of divorce first appears in Parshas Kiseitze. Makes you wonder if there was a capacity for divorce earlier. The mitzvot, the few mitzvot which are introduced in the book of Devarim, that's a discussion among the commentaries, are those mitzvot that were only given to the Jewish people at the end of the 40 years in the desert, or are they only recorded here at the end of the 40 years in the desert? We have the mitzvah to allow our workers to eat. Well, we have a myriad of mitzvahs in Kiseitze. In Kisovo, we have a repeat of the warnings and the curses if we don't keep the Torah. We have the curses the Jewish people accepted upon themselves. And that brings us to the conclusion, Parshas Nitzavim, which is already the day Moshe is going to pass away. Vayelech, Moshe Rabbeinu gathers the Jewish people. He tells them his last speech. He gives them the Song of Ha'azinu, which is testimony that God will be with us, even though we will be punished. Remember, I forewarned you. God took care of you and brought you this far. God will exile you when you sin, and God will bring you back. He hasn't left you. The Song of Azinu is another powerful refute to Christian claims. And then we come to the conclusion of the Torah, Parshas Vezos HaBracha, in which Moshe Rabbeinu blesses each tribe, and then we have the recording of Moshe's ascent to the mountaintop, and the conclusion of the Torah. Now let's begin our Parsha. Parshat Devarim. Rashi learns that the first psukim are all rebuke. Moshe Rabbeinu starts recording where we've traveled, and in enumerating the places where we camped, Moshe is really alluding to all the sins we've done. Chazal tell us that every person has b'chira chofshi. We all have free choice. We have a choice to do good. We have a choice to do better. Every person has free choice. And yet, Chazal say that certain sins were predestined. Adam wasn't supposed to remain in the Garden of Eden. The plan was that the world would evolve. But God wanted us to begin in the Garden of Eden, come out of the Garden of Eden, and evolve from there. The Gemara has an interesting comment. The Gemara says that the Jewish people sinned in the Egel, and King David sinned with Bathsheba. Those were sins that were pre-planned. They were planned into creation. God wanted, so to speak, that we would have role models. many Gedolim wrote that we shouldn't read biographies of giants. When we read biographies of great people, so very often that's discouraging, because the biography tells you how at age 5 he knew all of Tanakh, at age 7 he finished Mishnah, at age 10 he knew all of Shas, by 13 he was the top posek of all of Europe. You read these biographies and you say, okay, so he's this wonderful genius, a miracle child, and who am I? What does it say to me? So that's why Rav Huttner writes, in the Pachat Yitzchak, he writes that he's against biographies. He says, biographies only tell you the highs. They don't tell you the lows. Every giant, every Torah sage had his ups and had his downs. We've discussed the story of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish numerous times, right? Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish leaps across the river, across the Yarden to catch up to Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan tells him, Chel Chalo Raito, you should use that strength for Torah. Reish Lakish says, your beauty belongs on a woman. Rav Yochanan says, I have a sister who's more beautiful than me. You come back to learning Torah, I'll give you my sister. Reish Lakish comes back to learning Torah. This much we know. But how many of us remember the conclusion of the story? The conclusion of the story is that Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan are learning, and you can't pass more than 5 daf and shas without encountering Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan composed the Jerusalem Talmud, and the continuation of the story is they're studying and they start discussing certain weapons. When are these weapons fit for use? Rav Yochanan says one way, and Reish Lakish says, no, you got it wrong. I'm telling you, these weapons are not ready for use till you heat them and then you cauterize them. You put them, it's called cauterizing, you put them in cold water. So Rav Yochanan says, oh, you bandit, you. Yeah, I see you know your stuff. And Reish Lakish says, well, what good has all this learning done to me? When I was a bandit, they called me rabbi. Rabbi was a term for leader. I was called chief. And when I was a chief engine, right? I was a chief bandit. They called me chief. And now I'm learning Torah. So what? So you call me chief, but you're still reminding me that I'm a bandit. Now Rav Yochanan invested a lot of strength and a lot of effort to bring Reish Lakish to where he was. So Rav Yochanan says, what do you mean? I brought you close to the Shekhinah. How could you say that? How could you say that the... when you were a chief, bandit, you were a chief, and now you're a chief, how can you compare? And Rav Yochanan was hurt. And Reish Lakish fell ill. This part of the story, for some reason, people don't remember. And Reish Lakish's wife, that was Rav Yochanan's sister, came and started begging Rav Yochanan. He's going to die. Rav Yochanan said, well. And she said, how am I going to manage? He said, if that's your concern, I'll support you. Reish Lakish died. Rav Yochanan had no student to talk to. They brought him another student. Everything Rav Yochanan would say, this other student would bring him a bunch of supports. And then Rav Yochanan said, that's not what I need you for. When Reish Lakish was here, I'd say something. He'd ask me, what about this, and what about that, and what about the other thing, and then I'd have to work it out. And I'd grow in Torah, and he'd grow in Torah. You're telling me you're right. I know I'm right. I didn't make it up. I have a tradition. I need you to question what I'm saying. Rav Yochanan started weeping. Chazal say Rav Yochanan went insane. Rav Yochanan went insane out of sorrow for what had happened to Reish Lakish. To the point that the rabbis prayed for him to pass away, and he passed away. Now that's a part of the story that we somehow don't remember. That's the end of the story. Maran Bab Mitzia. That's the end of the story. Reish Lakish died because he hurt Rav Yochanan's feelings. And Rav Yochanan was so saddened that in heaven they didn't leave Reish Lakish around.
I thought that he made mistake.
He didn't do anything to him. But if a tzaddik, if a Talmud Chacham feels bad, in Shemayim, that has an effect. He didn't do anything. But when his sister came and said, do me a favor, forgive him, pray for his health, Rav Yochanan was still upset at Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish didn't come. There are other parts to the story. Tonight, that's not our focus here, but when we read about giants, so for some reason we hear the story about how Reish Lakish did tshuva. No one tells you that Reish Lakish reached a point where he said, what good did it do to me? He also had a point where he felt bad about what happened and the fact that they were reminding him of his history. And no one tells you about how Rav Yochanan felt bad about what he did to Reish Lakish. part of a great person is that he has his ups and has his downs, and he climbs back up out of his downs. No one goes straight up. Everyone goes up and down. And that's why Rav Huttner writes, it's not good to read the biographies, because in the biographies, they do not record the person's downs. No one tells you how many times a person fell down. I can tell you a lot of stories, but that's not our goal tonight. In our parshiyot, Moshe Rabbeinu reviews with the Jewish people their downs. He says, look here, you fell. You're going into the land of Israel, you're a new generation. Learn from your history, learn from your mistakes, learn from what you did wrong. Don't let it happen again. I'm not going to be there for you. It's your fault I'm not going to be there for you. It's part of your punishment. We'll discuss that later in the parasha. But Moshe Rabbeinu says we have to focus on the past because these are things that will easily come up in the land of Israel, and I'm not going to be there for you. So that's why the first thing Moshe does is Ho'il Moshe Be'er. Moshe reviews the Torah. He says, here are points where I think you don't have clarity. Here are points where I think questions will arise when I'm not around. Moshe clarifies it to the Jewish people. And Moshe also reviews history. And Moshe points out to them what's wrong. Chazal tell us that the greats of the Jewish people, they were not quick to rebuke. Quite the contrary. They waited. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't rebuke till his last days. Yaakov Avinu didn't rebuke till his last days. There are many reasons offered in the Midrash as to why you shouldn't rebuke a person frequently. You should hold it in. Usually, no one wants to hear it, and we don't know how to say it. You got to prepare yourself to say it with the proper intent, and at the proper time, and with the proper wording. So now Moshe Rabbeinu says a lot in a few words. You'll read Rashi, you'll see the lengthy Rashis in the beginning of the parsha. Every word here, Moshe's telling them, this is this, and that's that. They're all hints. A wise person doesn't have to spell things out, and a wise person, when he hears rebuke, doesn't need it spelled out for him. You'll find throughout the Shas that the sages, when they spoke to their students, spoke in allusions. They didn't say things overtly. If you're a wise student, that should be enough. I don't know if we have any wise teachers or wise students today. I don't know if any of us are on that level. But they... Right. I'm with you. Chazal say that in the concept of Tarat HaLashon, when the Talmud discusses that a person has to speak a clean language, so the Talmud says, provided that the students understand you. If it's ever at the expense of their understanding, then use even foul language, but make sure they understand the concept, because the Torah is more important. We say whenever it's possible, we use clean language, but not at the expense of Torah. When Moshe reviews the sin of the Egel, so Moshe calls it Vidi Zahav, the place where you had too much gold. We live in a generation where we have too much. That's why people are running around to psychologists. The statistics in Western countries are so high, people run to psychologists. The Mishnah says, Batala, when a person has nothing to do, it leads him either to insanity or it leads him to promiscuity, it leads to his destruction. When a person has, he has too much, he has too much good. We often think, if God would only give me prosperity, if I had a good parnasa, I had a good home, then I'd be able to learn Torah well. It doesn't work that way. The Rush had a few children. One of his children was, his youngest child was spoiled. He writes in his own biography, he writes, when I was a child, so every day I'd wake up and say, my stomach hurts, my head hurts, this hurts, that hurts. They never sent me to school. They brought a Rebbe home, and I always found excuses to get out of learning with him. I became a teenager, I barely learned, and then they finally got me married off, got me a position as a rabbi of a community. And when I was rabbi of the community, I was completely impoverished. I had a bunch of tzaras, and that's when I really started learning, when life got tough on me. Very often we think, when life's comfortable, that's when I'll grow. And we see throughout history, it was specifically when things were tough that people grew. Moshe Rabbeinu turns to God. Chazal say when he's rebuking the Jewish people and saying, Vidi Zahav, he's also turning to the Ribbono Shel Olam and saying, what'd you give me so much gold for? Sometimes I feel like when parents send their kids to Israel and they give them a lot of money and they give them a room and an apartment and internet, like Chazal say, Maya Saben Velo Yachta, if you give your child internet and you're not there looking over his shoulders, what do you want from the boy? Obviously, we're all responsible for our actions, but we're also responsible not to put our children in situations of tests. Chazal said, Moshe Rabbeinu said, if you take a child, you put perfume on him, you put him in good clothes, you bathe him, you comb him, you set him up, you put a wallet around his neck with a ton of money, and you put him in a brothel. Now what do you want from him? What's the natural next step? Technically he's responsible for his actions, he shouldn't do it. But what have you done as a parent? That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to God. You took the Jewish people, you gave them a ton of money, and you put them in a situation where they could easily set up an egel. Well, you set them up to this. So they're responsible for the egel. But at the same time, why'd you give them so much material good? And we have to remember that as parents also. It's not always so good to give our kids extra money they should have in their pocket. What are they going to do with it? There's an age for everything and a time and a place for everything. Chazal discussed when Moshe Rabbeinu refers to the 11 days from Horeb, there are different opinions as to what he's alluding to. What was his rebuke there? One opinion says that when he went up to the mountaintop to receive the 10 commandments, or the Torah, so the first 11 days, the people were still focused on Sinai and Torah. The next days, they already started thinking, how could we go back to our pagan ways? And the ego was not a product of one moment. The ego was a product of weeks of desire. They kept thinking, how can we get back to this? We have to know that when the Torah tells us, Lo sachmol, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, the Torah is telling us, nip it at the bud. The person has to control his thoughts, because when we let our thoughts wander, well, acharei machshavot olchim ha-maasim. Our actions follow our thoughts. The Jewish people didn't do the egel in one moment. Moshe didn't show up, so they did the egel. No. That's what Moshe is alluding to here. When he says it was an 11-day journey, Moshe is saying, I know that the egel didn't happen in a split second. I didn't show, so he made a wild party, and then things just evolved. It doesn't work that way. It's a question of where your thoughts were before the party, before I didn't show up. And that's what Moshe is alluding to here. He's saying, you were thinking about it for a while. Chazal say, if a person is suspected of something and he didn't do it, then chances are he thought of doing it. And if he didn't think of doing it, he saw others doing it and was happy. But the Gemara gives different options. The Gemara says it could be he's completely innocent, and then it's just the cleansing of other things. But the Gemara says it could also be a lot of other things that caused him to be suspected. Moshe Rabbeinu begins the speech. The Torah tells us it was 11 months in the beginning of the month. So we're talking about, what's 11 months? Shvat. Right? Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Rosh Chodesh Shvat, and the book is going to be said over all the month of Shvat, and 7 days into the month of Adar, right? Zayin Adar Moshe passes away. What? Oh, so if we say there were two Adars, so we have 67 days. If not, we have 37 days. One way or the other. So it's a pretty short amount of time that Moshe is going to be giving these speeches. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to speak before he proved himself. He only speaks after he's started conquering the land of Israel. And this is something we have to remember. Chazal tell us, Lo'olam te'ismol docha v'min mekarevet, that the balance as a parent and as an educator is that the left hand, the weaker hand, is the hand that rebukes, that pushes, and the right hand is the one that brings close. You don't use both hands to hit a kid. One hand hugs, the other hand hits. If you have to hit. I mean, obviously, these are allegories. And the weaker hand is the one that hits. Well, it's not only a concept of weak and strong, it's also a concept of chronology. Meaning a person has to first show that you love. If you've given your child, or your student, or your spouse, so much compliment and so much show of affection that outweighs what you're about to say, then you can say what you have to say. Very often when we want to show something positive, when we want to tell a roommate thanks, someone did us a favor, so we use weak terminology. We're very bad at giving thanks, at showing appreciation, because our ego gets in the way. I show appreciation to him, so it's like, thanks. But when we want to show anger, when we want to exhibit distaste, then we have no problem showing an emotion. We could show anger, we could raise our voice, we could show affection. Suddenly, we're all Shakespeare. We got a limitless amount of poetry reeling off our tongues. What happened? We have to remember, if I didn't give much more affection than I'm about to give anger or whatever bitter remark, I have no right to say it. small docha, bimin mekarevet. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't rebuke the Jewish people till I've given them more. 40 years you've led them in the desert. He says, yeah, I have to show them. So he conquers the two greatest kings of Israel, the two kings that were being paid by all the other kings to protect the entrance to the land of Israel, giants. After he's done that, he could talk. And in his footsteps goes the Navi Yirmiyahu. Rashi in the beginning of Yirmiyahu shows the correlation between Moshe and Yirmiyahu, and there's more. Rashi only lists a few points. There are many points where Yirmiyahu is like Moshe Rabbeinu. This is one of them. God tells Yirmiyahu, go rebuke the people. Yirmiyahu says, but I haven't done anything. Moshe Rabbeinu rebuked them after 40 years that he supported them. I'm starting as a youngster. I'm going to go rebuke. Who am I? How could I do that? Yeah.
Rabbi, are you allowed to physically punish somebody to get them on the right path?
It's a good question. So the answer to that is... Let's watch him tomorrow night. We have a meaning, there's the technical answer. You see a person, he's about to slit his throat. Yeah, if you have to throw a rock at him to stop him from slitting his throat, you throw a rock at him, right? So technically the answer is yes. You do sometimes take physical force to stop a person from hurting themselves. But the practical answer is more complex. It would depend on the scenario. If there are other ways, you know, and life-saving, the first thing they teach you is before you dive in to save the person, see if you could throw him one of those things, tubes or something. A life preserver, throw him something, extend the pole before you throw yourself in. So the same thing here. Sure, there's a last resort that sometimes you have to revert to that resort. But you have to know if and when.
Yeah. Small docha.
Small docha, the min mekarevet. Where is that? It's in the Gemara. Where? I think Sanhedrin. I have to check. Hashem spoke to the Jewish people and said, Rav lachem shevet bahar hazeh. You've become great by this mountain. Now go travel. They're traveling and they're headed for the land of Israel. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know, it's easy. Now we could do it. We're not so far away. And technically, if we would have gone then, there wouldn't have been any war. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu repeatedly refers to it as just come inherit the land. Because the nations were so awestruck at that point from all the miracles. Let's imagine what it is, the Jewish people traveling in the desert. So think about 2 million people. We're talking about, let's say, people traveling the size of, let's say, half of New York, right? That's the area of the people traveling. And in front of them they have a pillar at night, a pillar of fire that gives light throughout the camp. So that means nations from a distance see this huge pillar every night. They look out into the desert. And from all areas, you see, and if you come closer, you start seeing clouds surrounding the people. And the nations, Chazal tell us, every morning after the man fell, the man that was not collected would melt into the rivers, the animals would drink the water, and then the animals would have a special flavor because they were drinking man juice. I mean, melted man would flow into the rivers. The nations would eat the animals and they'd say, what changed? How come they taste so good? And they'd all say, it's thanks to the man, thanks to the juice. And they'd go out and see. So you have man. You have this huge rock that gives enough water for 2 million people, and it has streams going to each shevet. Miracles. Now this nation is coming to the land of Israel, and the Jordan's going to split before them. And according to Chazal, when the Jordan split, it wasn't like the Yamsuf splitting that just split in two, but it was like an invisible wall stopped the waters, and the waters just kept piling up, like a huge tsunami. So the nations, again, anyone that looked out to that distance started seeing this huge pillar piling up. And it wasn't for a matter of minutes, it was for a matter of hours, because you had 2 million people crossing the Jordan, and when they were entered the Jordan, when all 2 million were standing in the Jordan, Yeshua said, now stop. So they all stood, and the waters are piling up next to them, and then Yeshua says, now we have to discuss some rules. We're entering the land of Israel. Before you set foot onto the land, there are a few conditions. And then he makes some pacts with them while they're all standing there seeing the water pile up to their right. And then after they've all agreed, they move in. Had they walked in at coming out of Mitzrayim, walking into the land of Eretz Yisrael, the nations would have just left. They would have said, whatever you want, you're the boss. Remember, Yahushua sent a letter giving them three options. You want to fight, we'll kill you. You want to leave, you can go. You want to stay and accept the seven Noahide laws, you could stay and pay taxes. Your choice. Now, had we gone in right away, the way God wanted us to do, it would have been easy. And that's what Moshe tells them. You know, we traversed a fierce desert. A desert that no one dares enter. A desert where they had snakes that were the size of beans. You're talking about thick, huge snakes. No one dared go in this desert. They had scorpions that were the size of bows. You're talking about these huge scorpions going across the desert. There's no way anyone else would go through the desert. We went through the desert. Why did God bother taking us that route? God said, I want to bring them as soon as possible. I know them. They can make trouble. Let me bring them in as soon as I can. Let's avoid the possibility of the Jewish people ruining it. But we did one better. We ruined it even so. So Moshe says, look, God was pushing to get you in. Moshe says, and that's why we have the custom to read Parshas Devarim just before Tisha B'Av. Every year, Parshas Devarim is read the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av. Moshe says, Echa esa levadi, how can I carry alone tochachem u'masachem v'ribichem? Moshe says, this is ridiculous. We have one judge for every 10 people. Every 10 people have their own private judge. Why is that so? Because you guys keep fighting. You know you're about to enter the land of Israel where you'll get wealth that's far beyond what you have now. But that's not good enough. No. You look for reasons to fight. You guys are just fighting with one another for no good reason. And that's Moshe's review. He says, Echai Sarevadi, how could I carry that? Why was the second temple destroyed?
Everyone just
hates Sinat Chinam. What are we reading here? What's the Pasuk of Eicha in our Parsha? Moshe says, how could I carry this alone when you have baseless hatred? Sinat Chinam. That's brought you to a situation where I can't even handle it alone. I need to appoint so many judges that it reached a point where there was one judge for every 10 people. It's ridiculous.
Rabbi, don't we have so many different types of rabbis for every single community? Like, isn't that also a problem?
When it comes to teaching Torah, I hope that what a rabbi is doing is teaching Torah. Even though you're right, much of a rabbi's job is keeping the peace, but hopefully his primary job is teaching Torah. Yeah, but tochachem masachem and yivchem, tochachem is that they were fighting over suing one another for money. Masachem is the public needs, and rivchem is that they just look for reasons why to sue one another. I mean, they were just fighting. So Moshe appoints leaders. When Moshe appoints the judges, he says about them, Va'asimim derashechem, I will place them as your leaders. Chazal said, read it as Va'ashimen. I will place them in a position where they're responsible for your ashma, for your blame. It's no great shakes to be a leader, especially of the Jewish people. Chazal said, when you're a leader of the Jewish people, God says, that's my children you're dealing with. I was once teaching an orphan, and I felt he needed to be yelled at. So I called my rabbi and I asked him, what am I supposed to do? Chazal said, you're not allowed to pain an orphan, but this child needs to be yelled at. I'm not doing him any favor by not yelling at him, but I don't want to take this responsibility. So he said to me, look, it's like this. When you teach a regular child, it's that you're playing with a firecracker. You're not allowed to yell at a regular child baselessly either. And if you misuse a firecracker, well, then a person could lose a finger. You could get burnt, you could lose a finger. When you're dealing with a yosom, when you're dealing with an orphan, then you're dealing with dynamite. So then you could do good things with dynamite. But you understand that if you get it wrong, it's not just your fingers. So he said, if you have to yell at him, you have to yell at him. But think it through very, very well, what you're going to say, how you're going to say, when you're going to say, exactly what he deserves. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Jewish people, Vashimim v'rashichem, I'm going to take leaders, but that's Vashimim v'rashichem. To be in such a position is to be a source for blame. And the Jewish people, they erred over here as well. They said, good idea. They figured, we'll get away with more if we don't have to deal with Moshe directly. You know, maybe it's a judge, I'll have an in. And that was also a mistake. here we have an interesting medrash. The medrash says Moshe appointed leaders from each tribe so they would recognize him. Moshe says, if you come before me, what do I know what tribe you're from just by looking at your talis? The medrash says each tribe had a different design on their talis. And they had different stripes. They're talit gadol. They'd walk around with their talis all day. And when a person would come to you, you could just tell what shevet he was from just from the design of their talis. Now this is a medrash that I haven't seen inside. Rav Pesach Zatzal quoted it, but I haven't seen it inside. Yeah.
So what design do we have today? I
don't know. The design we have today, it says in Aruch HaShulchan, the fact that we have black stripes is that commemorate the tchelas.
Yeah.
Or remembering the tchelas.
No, I thought the black stripes were to commemorate the destruction of David's house. That's what I thought.
Okay.
Why would the black stripes?
Well, it says tcheles is like the sky.
Yeah.
And it's a machlokas Rambam Rashi, whether it's the sky by day or the sky by night.
Yeah, but we're not supposed to use tcheles in the end. Tcheles is always the blue, but be toned.
Okay.
Suddenly.
Well, this was to commemorate. I think the Shulchan writes, being that we don't have tcheles, so we commemorate it by having the stripes. Okay, so we're traveling. And Moshe says, we can do it. And the people come and say, no, let's send people. We want to send people. So here the people went out of order, out of line. You know, in the army, you're supposed to go to your mifaked. Your mifaked goes as the request to the next rank. Everyone goes in order. In the Jewish people, it was supposed to be that way too. But they didn't do that. All the people got together by Moshe's tent and said, we want to send people. So Moshe thinks, well, they know that we won't conquer all of Israel in a day. It's going to take over a decade. It's going to take time. So they're thinking that why don't we enter the better part of the land first, and we'll expand from there. So Moshe says, fine. If that's the idea, okay, good idea. God says, no, 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 no. No way they appoint the messengers. You and I, we will choose the messengers. They don't appoint the messengers. And this was a critical point. Because the people who were chosen, even though they came back and they saw how to present the things to scare the people, they were at least truthful about the land of Israel. At least about the land, they said it's a really good land. The people, the nations there, they're powerful. We don't know how we'll conquer them. God can't overcome these nations. That they said. But when it came to the land, they were truthful. And because they were truthful, the people ultimately regretted their crying. Meaning, remember, the spies came back. The people wept all of Tisha B'Av night, saying, we can't do this, we're all going to die. God's only bringing us here to punish us because we did idol worship in Egypt, so he's brought us here to punish us. And it was pointless crying. But the next day, they started repenting. Why did they start repenting? Well, the source of it was that the spies validated what Moshe and God had been telling them. God had said, Moshe had told them, it's a good land. Even the spies, all they said was, the nations are powerful, there's Amalek, there's this, there's that, there are giants. But the fruits, they said, the fruits are good. The land is good.
Okay.
So, the people, when they hear the words of the spies, they refuse. They start gathering from tent to tent. They spend the night putting together a grouping to oppose Moshe. And they decide that God brought them here out of hatred. Moshe Rabbeinu tries to convince them that that's ridiculous. He says, look, why did God carry you over all the snakes and scorpions? If God really wanted you to die, he could have just let you die in this desert. This is a desert where everyone else who tries to pass it dies. It's not true. God carried you like a person carries his son on his shoulders. So that's ridiculous. Moshe, Yeshua, and Kalev try to convince them not to do that. They refuse. And so God says, you know what? If that's what you want, you're saying you will die, you will cry, your children will die, fine, you will die, your children will die. And at that point, Jewish history is decreed. At that point, God decrees that this night of Tisha B'Av, God says, Atem b'chitem b'chiyah shel chinam, you wept for naught, God says, I will set this night, the night of Tisha B'Av, the Tchiyah Dorot, it's going to be for generations, a night that, at which I'll give you reasons to cry. And that's another reason why we read this, the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av. Moshe Rabbeinu tells them an interesting line. He says, and you know what? Because of you, Hashem got upset at me as well. What's the connection? So,
oh, because of the hitting the water. And I had an issue with this every time I learned it, because he doesn't take responsibility for himself.
Okay.
Maybe
so,
he talked about his last chicken.
Could be.
Why
there was once a king.
That they made him. That bothers me a lot.
Wait. Slow. Okay. There was once a king who was trying desperately to catch a bandit. There was a bandit who used to rob the highways. And the king said a bounty, and he posted signs all over, we have to catch this bandit. And the people were very upset, because this bandit, this pirate, he was really wrecking havoc. And finally the day came that the king's men caught the bandit. So they bring the bandit to trial, and they decide he's going to get hung. And everyone's happy that the bandit is going to get hung. So the day comes for the hanging, and the king says, can anyone say a good word about this man? Can anyone give me any reason not to hang this man? And the crowd is silent. And a little boy steps forward. And the boy says, I can. So the king says, really, tell me something. Why shouldn't I hang this man? So the boy says, because that man is my father. And maybe he deserves to be hung. But what have I done that I deserve to be an orphan? In the justice system here on earth, we cannot take into account the ramifications of punishment. If he deserves to be hung, then it's his fault. We say, you know, the ramification that his son is going to be an orphan, we can't take responsibility for that. We can try to administer justice, and if there are innocent bystanders that are hurt, that's not our responsibility. In God's justice system, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to say at the end of the book of Devarim, Hatsu Tamim Pa'olo Ki Chol Derachav Mishpat. God is the rock whose actions are whole. Hatsu Tamim Pa'olo Ki Chol Derachav Mishpat. All his ways are justice. Kelemuna, he is a God of faith. Ve'en Aved, and there is nothing unfair about the way God runs the world. You know what that means? That means that if Mr. X is ill, and his wife has to do more work, and his children can't do homework with him, and his parents are at home worrying about him, and his neighbor is bothered by the lawn that isn't cut, and his boss feels like his business is on the brink because he's not showing up to work, and the nurses see him and they feel a slight pang of pain for the guy who's suffering, every person all around him, well, they're getting what they deserve. Wait. Hashem's justice system is complete. There's no one that suffers for a moment, but they don't deserve. Now, we don't understand the system, right? We don't understand why. But we know the system is such. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, Kelemuna ve'inade. Moshe Rabbeinu did something, and he deserved the punishment for it. For whatever reason. In the parasha we discussed the different explanations. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, the ramifications of the fact that I am not entering the land of Israel, to me, are like this. To you, are eternity. Had Moshe Rabbeinu entered the land of Israel, we wouldn't be where we are today. The Jewish people wouldn't have been exiled, the Jewish people wouldn't have gone into rapid decline, the whole future of the Jewish people would have been different. The whole book of Devarim is really Moshe Rabbeinu trying to so to speak, limit the damage. He's saying, I can't enter with you. How many times does Moshe Rabbeinu say it? Almost in every parasha he says, I can't enter, and so I have to tell you, A, B, C, and D. He says it in this week's parasha, he says it in Vashan, and he says it in Akif. He says it numerous times throughout Devarim, because the whole book of Devarim is Moshe saying, you know, I can't enter.
So if you know you can't enter, and it's just, then why does he say, because of them I can't enter?
So like what Moshe is saying is, he's saying, if there's a punishment here, and I get part of the punishment, let's say Moshe is his weight 1, And what the Jewish people as a whole get is a part of the punishment, weighs 10 million. Because the Jewish people, our whole future is altered because of that. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, then what's the cause? Is it my small action? Or do we say that if the major sufferer of this punishment is someone else, then maybe that's a big part of it. Moshe Rabbeinu says, and that's what David HaMelech explains in Tehillim, it's true, I deserved it. But God did it not only because I deserved it.
What does that pasuk say?
There are a few pasukim. This pasuk says, "Gambi hitanaf Hashem," against me too Hashem got angry, "biglalchem," as a cause of you. Not that I didn't do anything wrong. God doesn't get angry at Mr. A because of B.
But
obviously,
God got mad at me because of you.
What does "biglalchem" mean? What does "biglal" mean?
Because.
A cause, meaning I did something. God wouldn't have been angry at him if he didn't do it. But he's saying, what was the cause of this wrath and this anger? Because God wanted to punish you.
No, it sounds like he's not taking responsibility. That sounds like there's a meaning.
Okay. I think that there's another understanding if you want, but I don't think we have to come on to that understanding. I think this understanding is more important. At the end of the day,
you said most understand, share more than understand, so
right?
He did the action.
Okay, so if you want to, we could look at it differently. Why did really? What does this have to do with here? Moshe's talking about 38 years ago. Uh-huh. When did Moshe do the sin with the rocks? Now, a month ago, yeah. 2 months ago, right? So, well, not 2 months ago, Moshe did the sin with the rock, approximately. 7 months early, 7-8 months early. What is Moshe Rabbeinu saying? You know, you sinned with the Egel, and because you got also got angry at me. What Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, according to Rav Saadia Gaon, is he's saying, you know, we could have been in Israel 38 years ago. We never would have reached the point of the hitting of the rock. You leave a person enough room to err, eventually he brings about his own demise. You know, this whole 38 years is because of you. I've been in this desert for 38 years. It's because of you I had to give you the water, and ultimately you're right, I made a mistake.
But he doesn't sound like he said, what does he say? He takes responsibility in that one sentence.
Okay, so that depends on the word biglalchem.
Yeah.
And that's why I preferred the other explanation. Because in the other explanation, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, you should know, I'm suffering, but you're going to suffer much more.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Rabbi, but Moshe was supposed to get angry at all. This is the thing, because he was angry and he went down from his level that he was supposed to be. He went to hell.
Okay, that's the random, right? Okay. Yes.
Very simple question. This is the new generation that hasn't experienced any of these things. Why would they do it?
So we said that the point is to learn from the mistakes. And there's also a concept, kahale no me. The congregation is eternal. The individuals change. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying the rebuke so that we learn from it. I want us to rush forward just a minute. Because we're basically out of time. Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, you know, you never repented for the sin of the Meraglim. The Jewish people never repented for the sin of the spies. He says, you know, God didn't listen to your weeping. Why didn't God listen to the weeping? So there are four reasons. Number one, it's Chil Hashem. Number two, you were warned at the time by Moshe, Yoshua, and Tov, and you didn't listen. Number three, when you did do tshuva, you didn't do real tshuva. Your tshuva was a tshuva because you were scared of the punishment. You never did a complete tshuva. And when a person does tshuva from fear of punishment, so then the decree doesn't fall off. Kayin never does a complete tshuva. Kayin only does tshuva. I don't want this punishment, God. So God says, okay, we'll figure a way out. Shaul, when he sins with Amalek, never does a complete tshuva. The pasuk stresses Shaul is concerned with the repercussions of his sin. He's not considered with the root. He's not concerned with the root of the sin. And by the same token, the Jewish people, The Jewish people were concerned with the repercussions. They weren't concerned with the sin. They did tshuva mi'irat ha'onesh. They didn't do tshuva because they recognized, hey, this was wrong of us. We weren't connected to Hashem the way we should have been. There's also the reason that it was exiled in with the shvua. That's the fourth reason. Hashem tells the Jewish people, you're passing near Esav. And here we have to listen closely. Hashem says, you're passing near Esav. They will be scared of you, but you be very careful. V'nishmaltem me'od. When Rabbi Eliezer would reach this pasuk, he'd start crying. Rabbi Eliezer would say, look at what Hashem's telling us. When you're near Esav, and Esav is scared of you because you're keeping the Torah, Hashem says, be very careful. And what's going to be when we're near Esav, and Esav is not scared of us, and we're not keeping the Torah? And that's why Rabbi Eliezer would weep when he read this pasuk. Hashem tells us, you should know there's a godly plan, you can't just conquer any land. I gave Esav his territory, I gave Lot's children their territory, and that's why the pasuk records the miraculous wars of the sons of Lot, that they conquered giants, because technically it was against all odds, but God says, I wanted them to have that land, so don't take it from them. And then Hashem records how Esav and Lot's children annihilated. They annihilated all the people who lived in that territory to ensure that no one would ever come to take it back from them. The pasuk also records how part of the Philistine territory was conquered by other nations so that we could take it, because we had a pact with the Philistines and we weren't going to break that pact. So Hashem records how that Philistine territory was conquered by others and then we could take it from them. We've reached almost the end of the parasha. Hashem says, when you pass by Edom, you don't need to buy anything from them, but buy water and bread from them. Their heretz is, if you're at an inn, then you patronize them. You give them parnasa. If you're a guest at someone's home, you find a way of benefiting him from the fact that you're a guest at his home. That's their heretz. There's a halacha that people, when they come to Yerushalayim, technically Yerushalayim belonged to all the tribes. So you couldn't charge rent during the regalim. Someone was at your home during the regal, you have to give them a freebie. You couldn't charge rent. But the same halacha also says, when he brings sacrifices, he has to leave you the hides. You get free hides from the sacrifices, leave it for him. Let him gain something from it. He had to take you in as a freebie, you leave him something, he has to gain from it. That's their heretz. A person should always want to make a balance. You shouldn't be a taker, you should be a giver. The Torah records how the fact that Sihon and Og attacked us was for our own benefit, so that we'd conquer their land. And to an extent, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is giving the speech now. He says, I wanted us to conquer part of the land, so that when we're settled here, we have a little bit of territory that's our own, now we can talk. A person's Yishuv Adat, when he's in his own home, or he's traveling, is completely different. There's more to be discussed, but we're out of time. We'll continue with Dov's Minute and Chassidut for anyone that wants to stick around.